China, like the Americas, was one of the more isolated centres for urban civilisation. This satellite photograph shows how it's clearly bounded on the east by the Pacific Ocean, and at the west there are the high mountains of Tibet and the Himalayas, and the very inhospitable deserts, the Gobi, which is flat and stony, and the Taklamakan, which is the yellow bit in the middle here, which is sandy and highly dangerous. It's called the desert you go into and don't get out of. Nevertheless, in the later centuries BC, there were routes which developed, obviously to Southeast Asia, which was very heavily influenced by China, and more slowly west, the caravan routes, known as the Silk Roads, leading in centuries AD to the Mediterranean, and probably involving goods which were being passed from caravan to caravan, rather than single caravans doing the whole journey. Most of it is pretty bare terrain. This is the Turfan Valley, the flaming mountain, so-called, when the sun hits them at the right angle, and much interrupted by ruins of ancient Chinese and other towns like this. Otherwise, land of China itself is not so remarkable, except some rather odd pinnacles of rock along the rivers, of which there are two major ones, the Yellow River to the north here, and the Yangtze to the south. This sort of up-down landscape in China is very characteristic, and I think it influences the Chinese drawings and paintings of later centuries too. It's a very big country. Central plains are very rich, they're fertile. Parts can manage even three crops a year, notably rice. And then the silk, secret of which they kept for centuries until someone stole some silk cocoons and took them west in the 6th century AD. And then there's jade, which they could get locally, and jadeite from slightly further west, which they used as other parts of the world use semi-precious stones. But jade requires some very special techniques for working. It's very hard, although it has this rather soft appearance. China's got a good supply of metals as well. In fact, its metallurgy is almost as early a starter as anywhere you will find in the world in the 3rd, 2nd millennium BC. And soon it involves a lot of very subtle alloying of other metals. In other respects, which we tend to regard as indicating high civilization, that is money, China too very early invented tokens for money, like miniature models of tools and implements, like a sort of primitive coinage. And they did this long before anybody else in the West. Another thing to bear in mind is that its neighbours in the frozen north were very busy, often very rich and belligerent nomads. They roamed Central Asia right the way across Siberia, and they often threatened China itself. Their arts were rather more naturalistic, rather like this odd one of a stag being attacked by a, looked more like a dog than a tiger, and with various other animal patterns on its body and a lovely pattern of its horns ending in little bird heads, which is itself a Chinese motif. We'll look at the arts of Central Asia on another occasion, but in various ways they did determine rather what China did. Pottery too, of course, is important much later and has an expected range too for the earlier period, even in the 4th and 3rd millennia BC, funny little bowls with faces on them, and pots of a type with these big swirling compositions which you would quite easily mistake for material being made far off to the west, even in Europe. And other more colourful ones like this, with these strange lumpy pointed feet, which also seem to be typical of the period and place. There are a number of major early Chinese dynasties which can be identified largely by their metalwork. For this, in one early group, we have some quite remarkable sculpture, remarkable both for its size and the heavily stylized figures. This is one of the Shang dynasty, 12th century BC, a ruler with a grossly enlarged hands holding a weapon of some sort and standing on an ornate stand, and a very heavily stylized face, big eyes, big ears. This is quite an important feature of Chinese art. It took a long time for them to begin to be interested in naturalism in the arts. In fact, not until the last 2 centuries BC, the Han dynasty. The kingdoms too began to settle down, though there's one period from the 5th century BC on called that of the Warring States, which reflects the behaviour in North China of various different states dynastically allied, but nevertheless getting at each other's throats all the time. And only in the late 3rd century BC was there real unification of China by the emperor who had the famous tomb with the terracotta army. The other bronzes from early dynasties before the 5th century BC are best studied in series of vessels and ritual bells. This is an odd one with dragon-like handles at either side and a fairly simple serpentine patterns over the body and the stand. It looks as though China was always much more interested in casting bronze than in hammering it, and this is one major difference that it has from the West. Maybe because the metal was more plentiful there, but it looks as though much of the bronze that they made was cast in piece moulds rather than by the lost wax method, whereby you make in various ways an enclosed wax model of what you want to cast, whether it's a pot or a figure, then you melt out the wax and pour in the bronze. This was a technique which seems to have been invented independently in various parts of the world, and we're still not quite sure when the Chinese started. There's a very set range of bronze vessel types with their own names and functions, usually ritual ones. And they're decorated usually with abstract motifs, many of which are inspired by animal forms. This is unusual by being covered with small figures of animals, demons and the like. You don't get quite so much of this figural representation this early period rather than pure pattern. And here there's a tiger clasping in his paws a man, not, I think, to attack him, but to protect him. And you see the sort of serpentine surface decoration over the whole of the bronze. Remember that this is the country of the tiger, not the lion. You only get lions really in India, and they only become known in China much later on. There are some pretty odd creatures here about too, of course, like the shaggy yak, which looks like an ordinary ox, has got much more hair to him than usual. And of course the fine two-humped Bactrian camel, which is much more elegant than the Arab dromedary. Well, back to the bronze patterns. They're very intricate, yet somehow logical. They cover the whole surface of the vessels. In this one there are two animal heads facing each other, big upturned noses, rather like a wolf, as it might be. One can never quite tell, identify these creatures. And there's a facing head in the middle. But they swirl over the surface of the vase, and you have to look twice to work out what the original motive might have been. There's always a considerable orderliness in this sort of Chinese art. Mirrored patterns, like the one we see on this pot, are quite important, and more elegant versions of it are these so-called Taotie patterns, which, if you look closely, are really feline-facing heads, with eyes, big cheeks and ears at the side, and yet at the same time they seem to be like two profile heads facing inwards, facing towards each other. And this is the sort of pattern which occurs time and again on these big bronzes. There's some quite interesting trompe l'oeil too. Some of the finest metalwork is bronze inlaid with gold and silver for vessels or furniture or for figures in the round. Here's a pot with silver inlay for the patterns, which are a good deal more formal, almost look Western in type, rather than the usual Chinese ones. Most of these are later, 4th to 1st centuries BC. This, for instance, is one of the later, an incense burner with the inlays in gold and these wonderful sweeping thin patterns. It shows a forest or a mountain, and if you look very close to the little animals romping around between the hills. It's a motif which is very popular in the 2nd and 1st century BC. And you won't find anything much more lively than this in ancient art. This is a very characteristic pose for the lions of the Han period, 2nd, 1st century BC, rearing up, growling at the heavens with their paws raised. Mirrors are important too. They usually have relief-decorated backs. Most of them have simple geometric patterns on, but here's one with these rather mysterious dragon-like creatures with a sort of geometric central body pattern to them. Then the other side is the bronze polished to serve as a mirror, and they have a simple handle, they don't have a stand. jade, or rather the harder jadeite, was being used way back in the Neolithic period in the 3rd millennium BC. It looks very soft, but it isn't, and it needs just as careful working as any quartz or any of the harder semi-precious stones that we are used to. But this is an example of a fairly early jade, which has simply been polished flat, cut out, and with figures and heads of snake-like creatures with rather lion-like heads to them. But this is a point which I'd like to talk about, another remarkable feature of Chinese art. We get used to thinking about art styles which are practiced in particular periods and expressed in all the arts, whatever the medium, whether it's sculpture or painting. Greek art's the obvious example. But in China, for reasons unknown, but perhaps for their sheer size and diversity, it's very noticeable that there are several different art styles can flourish at the same time, from the near-naturalistic to the totally abstract, and they seem to be determined very often by the medium that you're using, so that an artist working in lacquer would be working in one style, another one in jade, and yet another style, and so on, in bronze or stone. In some ways, the bronzes we've looked at have some diversity. It's probably a matter of time and place, because they run over many centuries. But the other major media in Chinese art do seem to develop their own styles and idioms, partly but not wholly determined by technique. So here's a jade, which seemed to defy the hardness of the metal by adopting very, very fluid forms for animals and patterns, much like those on the contemporary bronzes. The discs are important, they sort of symbolise the world, and we'll get some extremely elaborate discs of this sort. They're a very popular form. This is the detail of the dragon-like creature which decorates the edge of it. In early times too, there were some rather strange, presumably ritual vessels in jade, which look rather like towers. Nobody quite knows what they were for, what their purpose is. But the carving and hollowing out of a large chunk of jade like this was a laborious job. It looks easy, but it isn't. And then much later on, you get much more fluent figures like this dancing girl. The figures which you find in weaving and painted on silk are rather more naturalistic. This is a famous one from the first century grave of the Chinese Lady Dai, spelled D-A-I. It's a nice mixture of natural and stylized forms. There are lots of different scenes on it which tell the end of the life of Lady Dai asking her way to the other world, and then the feast being prepared for her at the bottom with mysterious creatures and things in between, all painted on silk. Here's a tapestry version, which is simply of a dragon coming from North China, and you get the decorative elements which make one begin to think of the carpets of Central Asia of much later periods. Actual painting on wood or wall tends to be more naturalistic. In fact, this is the medium in which one does see much more naturalism. These are painted on the lid of a wicker casket in the 1st century AD. The figures are perfectly naturally formed. A sort of three-quarter view of the faces is managed very well without the rather laborious treatment experimentation that one had to go through in Greek art. This sort of thing appears rather suddenly in Chinese art. And yet, on one and the same monument, it's possible to find stylized-looking, archaic-looking figures of demons and animals, alongside other panels with nearly natural figures. This mixture of styles is yet another of the odd characteristics of Chinese art of the later centuries BC. There are some other strange techniques, too, that you don't find elsewhere. Lacquer is built up in layers. It's a very laborious process to build up a hard surface of lacquer, and it's much used for tableware. You can get quite a degree of colour possible, and there's a strong liking for near-abstract treatment of patterns and animal figures. If you look closely here, these are sort of three phoenix birds spread around, but it looks like an abstract pattern. Long, wispy tendrils for limbs and bodies, and remind one sometimes a bit of Art Nouveau. There's a bit of that on the back of the mirror, which I showed you a few moments ago. There's really nothing else quite like this elsewhere in the ancient world, but as we shall see, when we look at the arts of the Americas, it's as well to keep in mind their associations with East Asia too. Stone sculpture of any size comes quite late, and it's not particularly surprising, but there are late some flat stone relief plaques which are used for decorating tombs, which you really have to view properly in rubbings, and they can include quite complicated narrative scenes. There are battles going on here, processions, and there's a certain amount of real, almost historical narrative which one comes across here, and only here, in most of these of the early century AD. Architecture is not on the whole too ambitious, but the Chinese did know about vaults. Their roofs tend to spread elegantly like this, and only AD do they get to have the turned up corners, which we think of more typically of Chinese art. The early ones are straight like this. Town plans are usually pretty symmetrical with central avenues. There's a strong tendency to give each house its own plot and territory. Here's a painting of part of a town. Some towers are used for, there's one shown here, for entertainment or as watchtowers, and the buildings on the whole tended to spread sideways rather than up here, as you see here. But if you look into the town, you can see how each property has its own sort of walls and definition. Much of the architecture is wooden, much painted, quite a good idea in a country which is rather prone to earthquakes. But they could think big in stone too when they had to, for the Great Wall, to keep the nomads out, and that was a wall which was started in the 4th century BC. In terms of world art, all this is rather unusual. The high point seems reached in the Han Dynasty of the last 2 centuries BC and the first 2 AD, but the succession into later centuries is clear, especially the tendency towards the stylization of pattern and figures, but it's always combined with an extreme finesse of technique. There's nothing sloppy about Chinese art in any of its forms. You might expect to look for big temple building, as you do elsewhere in the world, Mesopotamia, Greece, Egypt. Their religion wasn't really like that, at least until Buddhism sets in much later. Monumentality was on the whole confined to walls, but imperial death was quite remarkable. In Egypt, the royal tombs are fitted out with models of what will serve the king in the afterworld, but in China, they were provided with the whole afterworld in facsimile, either life-size or like the famous terracotta army, which you see a corner here, for the emperor who unified the country at the end of the 3rd century BC. But when they provided this sort of setting in the burial mounds, they provided not only an army, but also a full range of other officials and servants, the whole commissariat, as it were, of the court. There are similar groups elsewhere where the models are smaller, and they also include landscapes with buildings and figures and, according to the descriptions, rivers of mercury. So you've got a sort of small models of the original kingdom. Variety and precision on the whole characterized Chinese arts in all the various media that they used. Also a very marked stylistic difference from the arts of most other peoples. But there are traces of it in the West and, remarkably, in the Americas, which were first peopled from Asia.